Welcome to this edition of Buy Hold Sell, brought to you by Livewire Markets, Australia's number one website for expert investment analysis. Buy Hold Sell is a weekly show where two fund managers share their views on a selection of listed companies in their area of expertise. Buyers and sellers are what make the market, and you'll find that our guests don't always agree on the stocks being covered. Hit the subscribe button on your podcast player to be the first to receive new episodes each week. If there are stocks you'd like our guests to discuss, let us know by leaving a comment in the review segment. Remember, the views expressed in this show are not recommendations to invest. You should seek appropriate investment advice before making any investment decisions. And of course, please read the disclaimer in the show's notes. Let's get into the show.
Hello and welcome to Livewire's Buy, Hold, Sell. My name's James Marley. I'm a co-founder of Livewire Markets. And today we're talking about growth and trying to find it at a reasonable price. We all know that the market's been on a strong run. Some of those valuations are getting lofty. Everyone loves growth, but you do need to find it at a decent valuation. And to help me pick up a few tips on how we can find growth at a reasonable price, I'm joined by Kelly Maher from Sage and Emma Fisher from Airlie. Kelly, it's your rock and roll debut on Buy, Hold, Sell. So you get the first question. Risk assets, growth stocks, they've been testing highs once again. What's behind this and can it continue?
James, well, obviously, I think we're all aware of interest rates being at all-time lows and that's really the bottom line. Central banks being very focused on cash rates, keeping them low. And that's basically when you're not getting money in the bank, that's going to drive people to look elsewhere for returns. And we're seeing that in real estate, in the stock market, and most certainly in growth stocks. And until we see interest rates start to turn and start to rise, I really can't see that trend changing. And it certainly seems like interest rates are not going to rise substantially anytime soon.
Emma, it's a familiar tale, isn't it? I mean, it's sort of what drove markets, or is a big factor in markets for the past decade. And at the start of the year, we're all getting excited about higher rates and inflation, and it seems to have rolled over. Do you share Kelly's view? Is that the main driver here? Is it the interest rate backdrop?
Yeah, it certainly is. As Kelly said, it's interest rates. I think part of the strength that we're seeing in markets is also driven by earnings. You know, household balance sheets are in great shape and corporate balance sheets are in great shape. We're about halfway through reporting season now and we really are seeing a lot of strength in results across the board. Obviously now half the country is back in lockdown, but I think the market's really willing to look through that because we can see this finish line in sight, hopefully, in terms of vaccination rates. So for growth stocks, I think it's really this Goldilocks combination of strong economic environment, but also, as Kelly said, not so strong that we see an end to that very accommodative monetary policy settings that is very good for the valuations of growth stocks. You know, can it continue? I've got no idea. I would say I think there's a portion of the market where value seems pretty thin on the ground, and so I'd be treading cautiously in that portion of the market right now.
Listen, the growth stocks are starting to push into stratospheric PEs, and I know it's not all about the PE, but I guess a question, have you had to adjust your appetite for high PEs, or have you had to rethink, you know, what your valuation criteria are, given that backdrop that we've talked about with that incredible stimulus and the low interest rate environment? Emma, I'll stay with you for now.
Yeah, so I think whenever, as you say, whenever you're allocating, you know, funds to valuations that are at all-time highs, you've got to be cautious because, you know, the future's unknowable and things can always go wrong. And if they go wrong on a stock that's on 50 times earnings, it's a long way down. But at the same time, I think we need to acknowledge the sort of limitations of what a multiple can tell us. It can tell us a lot about expectations, but it actually doesn't tell you anything about a company's real prospects. So unfortunately, there's no real shortcut for doing the work and, you know, understanding a company and where you think it's going. And then on a case-by-case basis, making an assessment, you know, whether or not you still think there's value on the table.
Kelly, uncharted, unprecedented, stratospheric, all words that have been used to describe the multiples on growth stocks. Have you changed the way you look at multiples and how you think about, you know, what you're willing to accept and what a traditional screen might have ruled out?
Look, I agree with Emma that, you know, with stocks trading at the lofty high multiples they are right now, there's not a lot of room for error, and any missteps or disappointments will get marked down harshly. So I guess the way I'm thinking of it is that I want to be looking for companies that are least likely to disappoint and preferably surprise on the upside. And in my experience, the companies that tend to surprise on the upside the most are the high-quality companies. So they're the ones with great management teams, high returns on capital, clear growth prospects, and the ability to self-fund their growth. And so they're the sort of companies that I'm looking for where, you know, even if things, you know, the world starts to go to change, then they can still grow and there's some optionality in their growth.
Well, you're going to take a slight step into some market activity. Afterpay recently received a bid from Square. It was, you know, a huge transaction on a stock that's been emblematic of the growth story. Emma, M&A activity, what's the significance, or is there any significance of that particular deal? And are you expecting to see more of it?
Yeah, I think what's significant about that deal, and actually a lot of the deals that we've seen in M&A recently, so not only Afterpay at what I might call an exorbitant valuation as a non-owner, but also on the infrastructure side, you know, mid-20s EBITDA multiples for businesses like Sydney Airport, Telstra Towers, Spark Infrastructure. You know, the significance of that is that you've got the private market clearly still willing to tie up capital over the long term at a very, very low implied discount rate. And this has happened at a time where the debate in the public markets over the last year has been, are discount rates too low? Is interest rates going up? And bond yields have been rising over the bulk of the last year. So I think that's really interesting, this disparity that you're getting. I think the implication is, yes, we should expect to see more, because if the private market is looking at valuations through this lens of very low discount rates, a lot of things still look quite attractive, probably to that side of the market.
Kelly, anything to add on that M&A space and any particular signals or messages that you've taken from, you know, there's the Afterpay deal, but as Emma highlighted, there's been a lot of transactions taking place lately.
Yeah, no, I think, and Emma's right, I think it'll continue cheap money. The Afterpay transaction really was, you know, a reminder that, you know, anything's up for grabs, if it's particularly if it's in the tech space, you know, if it's got a global, you know, franchise, if it's got best-in-class software that it can add value to another global player, as we've seen with Afterpay, you know, price doesn't have to be an issue. So, you know, I guess one company that springs to mind that could be in play even is Xero or Altium. We've seen Autodesk have a crack at that already. That could come back into play. So, yeah, with cheap money at the moment, you know, anything is up for grabs.
Okay. So we've had a bit of a hypothetical or a background discussion for growth investing in the growth environment. Let's put a little bit of the theory into practice, Kelly, and I'm going to start with you. I'd like you to call out, you know, two or three of the things that you look for when you're trying to find growth at a reasonable price, a couple of tangible examples, and maybe share one of the companies that you think fits that bill for you.
Sure. So when we're looking for growth, it's easy to find growth from the fundamental side, but, you know, in terms of reasonable value, that is definitely harder to find. So, you know, in terms of growth, we're looking for companies that operate in a healthy growth industry, that are well positioned, that have strong, sustainable competitive advantages, and high returns on capital, and plenty of growth options, and a strong management team to execute on those growth options. And then in terms of getting comfort that we're not paying too much, it just comes back to optionality. So if you can get comfortable with a share price, paying a share price for growth that is that you can clearly see, and even if you're slightly uncomfortable with the price that you're paying, if in the back of your mind you know that there are multiple other growth options that haven't necessarily been articulated by management, but you think they could execute on in the future, that gives us a lot of comfort. So an example might be would be like something like a Domino's, where, you know, if you can get comfortable with the business as it stands today, that's fine. But also, you know, that their propensity to buy a new territory down the track, it's not actually in the price at the moment. They're not talking about it. You know, that's a likely thing to happen. Then that gives you more comfort that the price you're paying today will end up being reasonable, or we hope.
Domino's is one. Emma, same question for you to wrap up the show for today. What are two or three things that help you build conviction that you're buying growth at a reasonable price, and what's a company that represents that for Airlie?
Yeah, sure. So the number one thing for us is returns. A business that can earn a good return on its capital, in our minds, is a good business. And it should trade at a higher multiple, because a dollar of cash that it throws off, more of that comes back to you as a shareholder, because less has to be reinvested in the business. So you've got to, you know, you kind of have to lump it that these sorts of businesses with those high return characteristics are naturally going to trade at higher multiples, as they should. The dream situation is when they don't. Before I go on to the stop that I would give an example that isn't nowhere near an onerous multiple. The other thing, as Kelly said, that we look at is management team. You know, even the best business, the wrong management team can drive it into the ground. So you've got to be careful there. And then balance sheet. You know, as I said, the future's unknowable. Things can always go wrong. You really need to give yourself breathing room and optionality on the balance sheet. So when the stars align and you can find all these things and find it undervalued, one example I'd give that's probably not the first example most people think of when they think of a growth stock is mineral resources. But it's a growth. Well, what is a growth stock? It's a business whose earnings today is not reflective of its earnings in the future. And I think that's the case for mineral resources. If they get where they want to go over the next 5 years in iron ore volume, they will be producing 90 million tonnes. And to put that number into context, Fortescue produces 180 million tonnes. So they'll be producing half of Fortescue. Fortescue's a $70 billion market cap company. Mineral Resources is 10.5. So we think there's a lot further to go just from the iron ore volume story. So everyone focuses on price and iron ore pricing, but if they're going to do four times the production that they're doing today, you know, pricing could fall by 75% and earnings would be flat. So that's one that we think fits the bill of a good solid growth stock, and it's incredibly cheap.
Well, that wraps up our show, our introductory show on finding growth at a reasonable price. If the PE makes your eyes water, I suggest you focus on the fundamentals, like our two guests today, and have a bit more of a look under the bonnet. Thanks very much for watching. If you enjoyed that show, give it a like, and if you've got your own thoughts on growth investing, why not leave a comment?
Thanks for listening to Buy, Hold, Sell, brought to you by Livewire Markets, Australia's number one source of expert investment analysis. Register for free at livewiremarkets.com to discover more exclusive investing articles, videos, and podcasts.